Let's welcome Dima.
Good afternoon, everyone. So today I'm going to tell you about some recent progress in understanding understanding ergodicity and its breaking in quantum many-body systems. So more specifically, I'm going to describe to you many-body localized phase, which is perhaps the only example of a robust non-ergodic phase that we currently know. So generally, we use quantum mechanics when we want to describe small quantum systems, such as atoms or, let's say, two interacting spins, right? And we use statistical mechanics to describe large quantum systems with many degrees of freedom. For example, if you want to describe many quantum spins one-half interacting with each other, we use statistical mechanics. Now, statistical mechanics is based on the very important assumption called ergodicity hypothesis. Essentially, ergodicity hypothesis assumes that the system would explore all the configurations that are allowed by global conservation laws, such as total energy energy conservation, right? And really, it is central for us to be able to describe many-body systems in terms of statistical mechanics. And in fact, everything else follows from it. So from this ergodicity hypothesis, equipartition follows, and then you can use it to define things like entropy, temperature, and so on. Now, in principle, all the systems we are dealing with can be thought of as sufficiently large quantum systems, right? So a natural question to ask, so if we start from microscopic quantum mechanical description of this large system, so does ergodicity hypothesis always follow? Or can it break down in some cases? And this is exactly the question that we would be interested in this talk. So this link between quantum mechanics and ergodicity. And so not all of you are working on these things. Most of you are not. So let me give you a couple of simple classical examples of ergodic and the cartoon example of a non-ergodic system. So, for example, if you take a stadium-shaped billiard and put a particle into it and give it some velocity, and then wait long enough, so motion is chaotic, and gradually the particle's trajectory would fill this whole stadium. Right. So this is a simple example of an ergodic system. Now, there are also examples where ergodicity can be broken. So for example, if you have a phase transition and you are breaking some symmetry spontaneously, you would end up in one of these minima. Okay, so you're no longer exploring the full phase space. So a really cartoon example, you know, if you think about countries, right? So people self-organize into countries, and in principle they don't explore the full phase space, right? Although, you know, some are keen to restore ergodicity as much as possible. So now we would like to think about quantum systems, and really the central concept that we would use is that of Anderson localization. So let me briefly tell you what it is. So you know, when you're learning solid state physics, so you're always learning about crystals and block states. So for example, if you have a one-dimensional crystal, so just this size can be thought of ions, and your electron can hop between neighboring ions, right? So you know that in this system you have block bands and block states, which are such that the particles which span the whole system, right? They're propagating, and the particle can get from one edge of your system to the other. Now, Anderson, more than 50 years ago, asked what happens if you have a disordered crystal. And so, and of course, all real life systems, you know, that we are dealing with in condensed matter are usually disordered because you have impurities, you have substitutions, and so on. Right? So, and you can consider a simple model. So let's consider the same crystal, but let's make the on-site energy slightly different. Right? For example, this would happen if ions were not identical, but let's say they were slightly different, as it happens. And what Anderson showed, that disorder can dramatically change the nature of the wave functions. So instead of propagating block states, you can end up with end up with localized states, which are really centered near some region in your crystal, and they decay exponentially away from it. With so wave function looks like this, and this length scale xi is known as localization length. So this has very important consequences. So because your electrons can no longer get from one edge of the sample to the other, and your material becomes insulating. So this in this regime there is no diffusion, and your material becomes an Anderson insulator. So those of you who are seeing this for the first time might think, well, this, you know, looks like a very simple model, right? And it is. But don't be deceived, because problems with disorder are very difficult, and you can appreciate it. You can appreciate it if you look a bit at the history. So Anderson wrote his original paper about localization in 1958, and Taulis, who is another brilliant condensed matter physicist, so in his paper from 1974, he was referring to the original paper of Anderson as a very difficult paper from 1958, and that was 16 years later, right? So, but now, you know, more than 50 years have passed, and we understand single particle localization well enough. So now we can move on to an even more complicated problem of localization in systems of many particles. So, question that I would like to ask is, so how can ergodicity break in a system of many interacting particles? And so, and since we have this concept of Anderson localization, natural mechanism to consider is localization, right? So let's consider disordered system and ask whether localization and ergodicity breaking survive as we add interactions. And so in the past couple of years, there has been a lot of progress in this field. And the answer that we now have is that, yes, localization is indeed possible in systems of many particles. And in fact, it is inevitable if the disorder is strong enough. Therefore, we have the many-body localized phase, which is a new phase that is non-ergodic, that cannot be described by statistical mechanics, and which has interesting properties. And I'm going to tell you about some of these properties. So, first, just so that you have an idea of where we are going, so let me very, very briefly tell you about the key properties of the many-body localized phase, and then later on in the talk you would understand how they originate, and I will tell you more about them. So I'm going to argue that the key property of the many-body localized phase is that it has extensively many emergent local integrals of motion. So what does that mean? It means that I can define a set of operators which I'm going to call tau zi, and you can think of these operators as some pseudo-spin, as a z-projection of some pseudo-spin one-half operator, which all commute with the Hamiltonian and with each other. And extensively many means that if I have system of L interacting spins, then I can define L such integrals of motion. So what is important is that these integrals of motion are quasi-local in the sense that if you look at how they affect your local your physical degrees of freedom, they're strongly acting only in some finite region, and their effect on spins far away is exponentially suppressed. So this is of course very different from the traditional ergodic systems which we describe as statistical mechanics, because there those have only a few global integrals of motion, such as total energy conservation or particle number conservation. Now, you will also see that many-body localized eigenstates have very unusual entanglement properties. They're very, very weakly entangled, and that also has interesting consequences. And so again, you should contrast this with the ergodic systems where it's known that the excited eigenstates have essentially thermal entanglement. So they have essentially maximally possible entanglement. So then we will also see how from this picture of local integrals of motion you can predict dynamical properties of the many-body localized phase, and we would see that they're largely universal and non-trivial. And at the end, I would mention some open question which might be interesting to some of you. So part of the motivation why we have come back to this pretty old problem now is experiments. So there have been a lot of experimental developments which now allow people to engineer artificial quantum systems which are quantum coherent and characterize their dynamics. And so perhaps the most important class of systems is called atoms. So originally what people did, they create magnetic traps by lasers, and they can trap a cloud of cold bosons or fermions in this trap. And so in about slightly over 15 years ago, they used this to realize Bose-Einstein condensate. So what is called cold atom experiments like? So here is a picture of Emmanuel Bloch, so who is the leading experimentalist working in this field right now. You can see, so this is a tabletop experiment, and Emmanuel appears to be cool and relaxed, and it seems like this is an experiment you can put together, in a couple of days, right? It doesn't look that complicated. However, if you take a step back and really look at this experiment, it looks more like this. So, the left one, in fact, it's a glamour shot of a cold atom experiment going out on a Friday night, and this is the experiment on the, what it looks like on Saturday morning, and in fact, on every other morning of the week. So these are very difficult experiments, but there has been a lot of progress. So in particular, so what people learn to do, so now they can not only trap this called atoms, but they can also engineer a periodic potential, right? So they can make an optical lattice which effectively gives you an artificial crystal. Moreover, so what is important about the systems, it is that their typical timescales are relatively long. So in this gives you an opportunity to prepare non-equilibrium states and then characterize the revolution. Right, so this is exactly what you need to study ergodicity and its breaking experimentally. People in this field also know how to make tunable disorders, so they have already observed Anderson insulator of non-interacting cold atoms, and now they are ready to. Yeah. Wait, I'm not sure I understand. So these systems are quantum mechanical, right? Because they're well decoupled from the environment, right? So so David is asking if you have a small particle, right? If you have, let's say, nanoparticle, some kind of colloid. So problem is people don't know how to cool such things down, right? So techniques that have been developed, they work well for certain boson and fermion atoms. But in principle, nothing stops you from doing this with more macroscopic particles. So the bottom line is that experiments are at a place where they're ready to study highly excited states and probe ergodicity and its breakdown. So now let me tell you a little bit more about this many-body localized phase. It would be convenient to have a specific simple model in mind. So let's consider a model which is similar to what I've mentioned. So let's consider a disordered one-dimensional crystal, with random on-site energies, but now we would have not a single particle hopping in this crystal, but many particles which are also interacting with each other. So this model can be mapped onto a spin 1/2 chain, so which is essentially XXZ chain with nearest neighbor interactions and random on-site field. So what people have learned in the recent years is that if you make disorder strong enough in this model, there is many-body localization, right? And if you make disorder weak, system goes into the ergodic phase. So this is a very good simple model that shows many-body localization. So now, disclaimer. So we would be interested in the properties of this model, which are quite different from the traditional condensed matter question, right? So usually condensed matter physicists, what they want to do with the quantum many-body system is to see its ground state, right? And let's say if it's topologically ordered or if it has some other kind of order, right? But we are gonna forget about ground states and we are really gonna be studying highly excited many-body states, okay? Let me now give you a heuristic picture of where this local integrals of motion come from. So let's consider our spin model, but first let's just keep the random field term and a ZZ interaction term, right? So this is a very simple model. So its eigenstates are simply product states of spins pointing up and down, so you have two to the power number of spins eigenstates. Now let me turn on weak hopping between them. So intuition is that as long as your system stays in the localized phase, what you can do, you can just locally slightly correct this product state to get the true eigenstates. Okay, so what this means mathematically is that you can get the eigenstates of your system by doing a sequence of local unitary transformations, right, which are such that they create such that the state, let's say, of spin here doesn't care that much about the state of a spin somewhere far away, right? So the crucial property, and it is very intuitive, is that you can obtain eigenstates of the system from product states by doing the sequence of local unitary transformations. So once you accept this property, so integrals of motion follow. And this is because essentially, so in the product state basis, SZ operators are integrals of motion. Now, what you need to do, you need to dress this SZ operators with the local unitary that diagonalizes your Hamiltonian, right? And we are going to call this operator tau. So sorry, I cannot show them because the pointer is dead. But essentially, they're simply SZ operators dressed with this quasi-local unitary transformation. And since this unitary is quasi-local, so would be this operator tau, right? So it would strongly affect only spins near spin near site I, right? And their effect on the spins far away would be exponentially small. So their support looks something like this, like what is shown on the right side of the picture. So these operators commute with the Hamiltonian and with each other, and they form a complete set in the sense that if I specify the values of each integral of motion, I uniquely specify the eigenstate. So now we can ask about. Peter, do you have a question? Well, then your unitary becomes very non-local, right? So it has to mix and entangle all the degrees of freedom, right? So in principle, you can define integral of motion even in the ergodic phase, obviously, except that they're very, very non-local. Speak up. For the ergodic phase, you can, but you'll have to do a lot of unitaries, right? Such that the information would propagate through the whole system. Here you have to do a finite number on each spin plus some exponential corrections. Was there a question? There, no. Mm-hmm. So now. In order to understand, yeah? Huh?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, this is a very good question. So, yeah, so Lee is asking, so you have a lot of integrals of motion, right? This seems like a special property of integrable systems, right? So, and I guess Lee is wondering whether this would be robust, right? Right. So this is a very good question. So On the one hand, we have better ansatz integrable systems, right, where we have lots of integral of motion, and we know that they're generally destroyed if you add a small perturbation. So this phase is not like that. So if I, for example, slightly deform my Hamiltonian, right, as long as I'm staying in the many-body localized phase, I can deform also this tau operators and get a new set of conserved quantities. Right, so this is what's remarkable about this phase, is that it is integrable in the robust way, right? So that this integrability survives small generic perturbation of the Hamiltonian. Mm-hmm. How to what? How to construct the use, practically, you mean? So, yeah, this is also a non-trivial question, right? But what you could do, I mean, one procedure would be to consider the limit when this jx is small, right? When the coupling between the spins is small. Then what you need to do, right? First, you would find the unitary with which you can get rid of the nearest neighbor terms which are ordered jx, right? Then what you would get, you would get a new Hamiltonian in which you would have interactions in the order jx squared, which would affect clusters of three spins. Then you would do it with clusters of three spins and get, you know, to jx to the cube, right, and so on. And essentially, you know, when this procedure converges, right, this signals that you're in the many-body localized phase, and this total unitary U is just the product of, right? You do this gradual unitary transformations. There are several other ways, so I can tell you after the talk, which are more practical and which some of the people in the building have implemented and shown to work. Okay, any other question? Okay, if not, let's go on. So next, if we would like to understand, next we would like to understand dynamical properties. And so, and for that, we need to know what the Hamiltonian looks like in this new basis of local integrals of motion. And general form is very simple and universal. So because Hamiltonian commutes with each operator tau z, right? It can only depend on tau z's, but not on tau x and tau y, right? So the Hamiltonian takes this diagonal form, so it contains tau z operators and interactions between pairs of tau z's and triplets and so on. And what is important is that there is still notion of locality, so the integrals of motion which have support far away from each other would interact only exponentially weakly. Okay? So, this is the illustration of that. So, intuitively, what this means is that in this many-body localized phase, you can always find quantum bits which can never relax. However, right, this doesn't mean that dynamics is trivial, because you can still have dephasing due to interactions between remote spins. So if you prepare some mixed state, which is not an eigenstate of which tau z, right, there would be dephasing and there would be entanglement between remote spins. And so this gives rise to universal dynamical properties. So now I would like to tell you a little bit about entanglement properties of the eigenstates and about dynamics of entanglement. But first, so let me ask you, so should I give you a very brief introduction about entanglement entropy, or do you all know it? Mina? Okay. So, Yes. So, that's good. You're the only brave person who admits she doesn't know it, right? So, So a very important characteristic of quantum many-body states is their entanglement entropy. So as it was realized relatively recently, actually. So let me define it. So let's consider some pure many-body state psi of some many-body system. And let's ask, so how quantum is it? Right, so for example, if I keep measuring my left subsystem, so does it care about the right subsystem? Would I always get the same result or not? And so the way to quantify it is as follows. So let's define a reduced density matrix of just the left subsystem. Right, so we trace out all the degrees of freedom on the right. And then so we got some density matrix, and you know, if the initial state was classical, right, this reduced density matrix would describe a pure state, and if it was very quantum and entanglement and entangled, this reduced density matrix would describe a very mixed state, right? Even though initially I started from a pure state. And so and the way to quantify the how mixed it is by simply calculating von Neumann entropy of this reduced density matrix. And this is what's called entanglement entropy. And so recently there has been a lot of interest in it because it provides a new and very insightful way of classifying and characterizing quantum order and ground states, right? So for example, topological order, but turns out that it's also very useful when you study excited states, as we will do. So, you know, very simple example. So let's say if you have just two spins, we can ask what is entanglement entropy for different familiar states. So if you have just a product state, it's zero. If you have a singlet, it's log two, right? Because left spin appears to be in a mixed state. Another example is that if you have a system of n spins, maximum entanglement you can achieve is simply number of spins in the left part times log two. And if you have an ergodic system, entanglement entropy of nearly all eigenstates is close to this maximal value. So, okay, so now let me tell you a little bit about entanglement properties of the many-body localized eigenstates. So, as we established, right, the key property is that many-body localized eigenstates can be obtained from product states by doing a sequence of local unitary of quasi-local unitary transformations. And first implication is that there is emergent integrability. And the second important implication is that eigenstates have very little entanglement, right? And this is intuitive because you are doing, right, so you are, when you're doing local unitary, you can only entangle spins nearby, right? But not spins far away from each other. So what does area law mean? Area law, it's just a jargon, so it means that entanglement is really limited to the boundary, right? So that as you increase the system size, entanglement stays constant, below some constant. So, and, also about 10 years ago, it was appreciated that these states are very special, and they're special because they allow very efficient classical description by matrix product states in one dimension and tensor network states in two dimensions or three dimensions. And so, and previously it was thought that this area law entanglement is only found in the ground state, in the ground states of gapped systems. So, but turns out that in the many-body localized phase, this is also true for the highly excited states. Now, again, for contrast, so if you have an ergodic system, there is a lot of entanglement, right? So the entanglement would scale as the volume of your system, right? As the number of degrees of freedom, because everybody is entangled with everybody, and. So Giffrey does not approve this property as much because most likely the states cannot be efficiently described. So, okay, this is just a numerical test. So here I'm showing behavior of entanglement entropy in the simple model that I've introduced before as we increase disorder strength. So, and what you see is that when disorder is weak, so it's on the left, all the states are very, very entangled. And then when disorder is strong, there is very little entanglement in almost all states. And you can check that they satisfy area law. So let me tell you a couple of words about dynamics in this phase. So setup that we would like to consider is actually a very standard setup for cold atoms experiments. So what you do, you prepare your system in some simple initial state, which is, let's say, a product state and not an eigenstate of your system. And then you evolve it with your Hamiltonian, and you characterize the resulting state. Using this universal Hamiltonian, right, we can very easily predict what a many-body localized system would do in such experiment. And let me just summarize the main properties. So one important property is that since we have this local conservation laws, the state retains the local memory of the initial state, right? So, and this is because I have these observables which are conserved and which are not allowed to change their values during the evolution. So they're stuck. Another property which is also easy to derive, and I'll be happy to show you how it's done after the talk, is that entanglement entropy grows in a universal way. So it grows as logarithm in time. Okay, so this is another signature of this many-body localized phase. So for comparison, if you have an ergodic system, then typically entanglement spreads linearly in time, so much, much faster. You can also predict the behavior of local observables in such an experiment, which is in fact what would be measured in an experiment, right? And you also find that it is universal. So in recent couple of years, there has been also various people discussed interesting connections between this phenomenon of many-body localization and other fields. So let me mention one possible connection to quantum computing. So in principle, if you think about the system, right? So we have the tau operators, which are very, very long-lived qubits, right? So if we have a many-body localized system in an experiment, we could use them for quantum information processing. So what is special about them also is that they don't relax, right? So they only lose coherence because of dephasing. And even this process is very slow. For such systems, so there are various techniques which come from nuclear magnetic resonance experiments, which actually allow you to restore coherence, right? So this kind of loss of coherence can be reversed by doing experiments like spin echo, where you keep applying different pulses to your spins, right? So in principle, this tells you that somewhat kind of counterintuitively, if you have a many-body system with which you can do you want to do quantum computation, the way to increase coherence would be to introduce disorder. Now, of course, there is an experimental challenge, so you need to find a reliable way of relating effective spins to the physical spins, right? Because in the experiment, you would manipulate the physical spins. So, but there is a hope that this can be done. Okay, so I have only maybe 1 minute left, as Yidun tells me. So let me mention some major open questions, which I find most interesting. So one important question is, what is the relation between glasses and many-body localization? So there are many, many very different glasses systems with the common features that they show logarithmically slow relaxation to their initial state. And the range of the sort of diversity of glasses systems is really enormous. So you can, there are electron glasses, right? So where you look at the relaxation of conductances, it's slow. So if you crumple a sheet of paper, right? Turns out it also shows glassy relaxation back to the straight state, right? There are also the electric glasses and so on. And I think a natural question is, so let's say if we restrict ourselves to electronic and electric glasses, so are they essentially just many-body localized systems which are weakly coupled to the thermal bath of phonons? Certainly this, the fact that you have logarithmic in time growth of entanglement, right, it's very reminiscent of the behavior in glasses. So another big question is, so is many-body localization really the mechanism of ergodicity breaking, right? So are there perhaps other robust mechanism which lead to the ergodicity breaking? Another very difficult question is, is there analog of many-body localization in classical systems, right? So currently, actually, we know a lot more about the quantum systems in this respect than about classical. So okay, there are other open questions. So let me just summarize. So message that I want you to take away from this talk is that many-body localized systems are a generic and robust class of systems which break ergodicity and are not described by statistical mechanics. So now we can complete our loop and give an answer, right? So not So quantum mechanical systems of many particle do not have to be ergodic, right? There are sufficiently broad classes where the pink arrow breaks down, and therefore statistical mechanics also breaks down. So I want to leave you with that. And so I just mentioned that, so if this sounds curious, so there are several people who are experts in this. So Pedro is a student here. Zlatko, Anusha, Isaac, and Johan are postdocs. And as you can see, Anusha is determined to survive another winter in Canada. And okay, you all know Giffre. So thank you.
So we have 3 minutes for questions.
So if you have a lattice that's not like truly disordered but is aperiodic, like a quasicrystal, do you get localization in that?
Yes, you do. That was studied, yeah, and you do.
And many-body localization, you don't know, but or do you know?
No, we know. Yes, you do get many-body localization as well. So at least in the one-dimensional models that were studied, yeah, you see essentially the same behavior. Of course, localization lengths could be a bit longer, but the essence is the same. And actually, this is a very useful property because in the experiments it's easy to make quasi-periodic potentials, right, by superposing. So this is important. Questions? Oh, please.
So with respect to your last point in trying to make the connection with the classical systems, do you, in those, you recover ergodicity if you add more energy to the system? Do you have the same analog here?
You recover ergodicity? You're asking if we have a similar property here. So, yeah, this is a good question. So there are lattice systems where all states can be many-body localized, right? So there, adding more energy would not help. But of course, so it is believed that there are systems where many-body states at sufficiently low energy densities are localized, right? But then above certain energy density, you have ergodicity, right? So in principle, in those systems, as you increase temperature, you would see a transition, right, between non-ergodic and ergodic behavior. But how exactly this happens, this is one of the important open questions, actually. So it's not, properties of the transitions are not well understood.
Any more questions? We still have time for one more short question.
Okay, you didn't use the word non-equilibrium or out of equilibrium in the talk, so I hope in the panel discussion we'll get you to comment on how these are a window into non-equilibrium physics.
No, I use non-equilibrium.
You used non-ergodic.
No, but for example, this experiment, right, system is very far from equilibrium, right?
Okay.
So I use dynamics instead of non-equilibrium.
You snuck it in.
Yeah, so this experiment, right, you're preparing a state which is very non-equilibrium, right, which has a lot of extra energy, right? And in these systems, you can understand what it would do.
Okay.
Okay, if no more questions, let's thank the speaker again.